And now, ladies and gentlemen, act two of our play.
Now, you'd better decide right off.
The bourgeois voice of Mrs. Nolak broke in upon his mellow fancies and roused him to action. He went to the phone and called up the Medill house.
Good evening, Miss Medill. Is Betty in? Oh, I see.
Miss Betty was out, had gone out to dinner. Then, when all seemed lost, the camel's back wandered curiously into the store. He was a dilapidated individual with a general trend about him of downwardness. His cap was pulled down low on his head, and his chin was pulled down low on his chest. He looked run down, down at the heels, and Salvation Army to the contrary, down and out. He said that he was a taxicab driver that the gentleman had hired at the Clarendon Hotel. He had been instructed to wait outside, but he had waited some time, and a suspicion had grown upon him that the gentleman had gone out the back way with the purpose to defraud him. Gentlemen sometimes did. So he had come in. He sank down onto the three-legged stool.
Want to go to a party?
I gotta work. I gotta keep my job.
It's a very good party.
It's a very good job.
I'll be a good fella. See, it's pretty.
Huh? Perry searched feverishly among the folds of the cloth.
You see, this is your part. You don't even have to talk. All you have to do is walk and sit down occasionally. You do all the sitting down. Think of it. I'm on my feet all the time, and you can sit down some of the time. The only time I can sit down is when you're lying down, and you can sit down when... Oh, any time. See?
What's that thing, a shroud?
Not at all. It's a camel.
Huh? Then Perry mentioned a sum of money, and the conversation left the lad of grunts and assumed a practical tinge. Perry and the taxi driver tried on the camel in front of the mirror.
You can't see it, but honestly, old man, you look simply great. Honestly, move around a little.
The hind legs move forward, giving the effect of a huge cat camel hunching its back preparatory to a spring.
No, move sideways.
The camel's hips went neatly out of joint. A hula dancer would have writhed in envy.
Good, isn't it?
Demanded Perry, turning to Mrs. Nolak for approval.
It looks lovely.
We'll take it.
The bundle was stowed under Perry's arm and they left the shop.
Go to the party.
He commanded as he took his seat in the back. What party?
Fancy dress party.
Well, whereabouts is it? This presented a new problem. Perry tried to remember, but the names of all those who had given parties during the holidays danced confusedly before his eyes. He could ask Mrs. Nolak, but on looking out the window, he saw that the shop was dark. Mrs. Nolak had already faded out, a little black smudge far down the snowy street.
Drive uptown. If you see a party, stop. Otherwise, I'll tell you when we get there.
He fell into a hazy daydream, and his thoughts wandered again to Betty. He imagined vaguely that they had had a disagreement because she refused to go to the party as the back part of the camel. He was just slipping off into a chilly doze when he was wakened by the taxi driver opening the door and shaking him by the arm. Hey, here we are, maybe. Perry looked out sleepily. A striped awning led from the curb up to a spreading gray house from which issued the low, drummy whine of expensive jazz. He recognized the Howard Tate House.
Sure, that's it. Taste party tonight. Sure, everybody's going.
Say, you sure these people ain't gonna romp on me for coming here?
If anybody says anything to you, you just tell them you're part of my costume.
The visualization of himself as a thing rather than a person seemed to reassure the individual. Perry stepped out under the shelter of the awning and began unrolling the camel.
Let's go.
Several minutes later, a melancholy, hungry-looking camel emitting clouds of smoke from his mouth and from the tip of his noble hump might have been seen crossing the threshold of the Howard Tate residence, passing a startled footman without so much as a snort and heading directly for the main stairs that led up to the ballroom. The beast walked with a peculiar gait which varied between an uncertain lockstep and a stampede, but can best be described by the word halting. The camel had a halting gait, and as he walked, he alternately elongated and contracted like a giant concertina.
The Howard Tates are, as everyone who lives in St. Paul knows, the most formidable people in town.
Mrs. Howard Tate was a Chicago Todd before she became a St. Paul Tate, and the family generally affect the conscious simplicity which has begun to be the earmark of the American aristocracy.
They have begun to prefer retainers rather than friends as dinner guests.
Spend a lot of money in a quiet way.
And having lost all sense of competition, are in the process of growing quite dull.
The dance this evening was for little Millicent Tate. The dancers were mostly from school and college. The younger married crowd was at the Townsend Circus Ball up at the Tally-Ho Club. Mrs. Tate was standing just inside the ballroom. Beside her were two middle-aged sycophants who were saying what a perfectly exquisite child Millicent was. It was at this moment that Mrs. Tate was grasped firmly by the skirt and her youngest daughter, Emily, aged 11, hurled herself with an oof into her mother's arms.
Why, Emily, what
What's the trouble?
There's a thing on the stairs, Mama. I think it's a big dog, Mama, but it doesn't look like a dog.
What do you mean, Emily?
Mama, it looks like a camel.
You saw a mean old shadow, dear, that's all.
No, I didn't. It was some kind of thing, Mama. Big.
The child must have seen something.
The sycophants agreed that the child must have seen something, and suddenly all three women took an instinctive step away from the door as the sounds of muffled steps were audible just outside. And then three startled gasps rang out as a dark brown form rounded the corner, and they saw what was apparently a huge beast looking down at them hungrily. Cried the ladies in chorus. The camel suddenly humped his back. And the gas turned to shrieks. The dancing stopped. The boys in long trousers looked at it rather disdainfully and sauntered over with their hands in their pockets, feeling that their intelligence was being insulted. But the girls uttered little shouts of glee.
It's a camel! Well, if he isn't the funniest!
The camel stood there uncertainly, swaying slightly from side to side, seeming to take in the room in a careful, appraising glance. Then, as if he had come to an abrupt decision, he turned and ambled swiftly out the door. Mr. Howard Tate had just come out of the library on the lower floor and was chatting with a young man in the hall. Suddenly, they heard the noise of shouting upstairs and a succession of bumping sounds, followed by the precipitous appearance at the foot of the stairway of a large brown beast that seemed to be going somewhere in a great hurry.
Now, what the devil?
The beast, affecting an air of extreme nonchalance, as if he had just remembered an important engagement, started at a mixed gait toward the front door. In fact, his front legs began casually to run.
Now, see here! Grab it! Butterfield, grab it!
The rear of the camel was embraced in a pair of compelling arms, and, realizing that further locomotion was impossible, the front end submitted to capture and stood resignedly in a state of some agitation. Mr. Tate, suspecting everything from an ingenious burglar to an escaped lunatic, gave crisp directions to the young man.
Hold him! Lead him in here, we'll soon see.
The camel consented to be led into the library, and Mr. Tate, after locking the door, took a revolver from a table drawer and instructed the young man to take the thing's head off. Then he gasped and returned the revolver to its hiding place.
Well, Perry Parkhurst.
I got the wrong party, Mr. Tate. I hope I didn't scare you.
Well, you gave us a thrill, Perry. You're bound for the Townsend Circus Ball.
That's the general idea.
Well, let me introduce Mr. Butterfield, Mr. Parkhurst. Butterfield is staying with us for a few days.
I got a little mixed up. I'm very sorry.
Perfectly all right. Most natural mistake in the world. I've got a clown rig, and I'm going down there myself after a while. Say, Butterfield, better change your mind and come down with us.
Butterfield demurred. He was going to bed.
Have a drink, Perry.
Thanks, I will.
And say, I forgot all about your hump, your friend there. Don't mean to seem discourteous. Is it anyone I know? Bring him out.
It's not a friend. I just rented him.
Does he drink?
Do you?
Demanded Perry, twisting himself tortuously around. There was a faint sound of assent.
Sure, he does. A really efficient camel ought to be able to drink enough to last him 3 days.
I tell you, he isn't exactly dressed up enough to come out. If you give me the bottle, I can hand it back to him, and he can take his inside.
From under the cloth was audible the enthusiastic smacking sound inspired by this suggestion. When a butler had appeared with bottles, glasses, and siphon, one of the bottles was handed back. Thereafter, the silent partner could be heard imbibing long potations at frequent intervals. And thus passed a benign hour. At 10 o'clock, Mr. Tate decided that they'd better be starting. He donned his clown's costume. Perry replaced the camel's head, and side by side they traversed, on foot, the single block between the Tates and the Tally Ho Club. The circus ball was in full swing. A great tent fly had been put up inside the ballroom, and round the walls had been built rows of booths representing the various attractions of a circus sideshow. But these were now vacated, and over the floor swarmed a shouting, laughing medley of youth and color.
Clowns.
Bearded ladies.
Acrobats.
Bareback riders.
Ringmasters.
Tattooed men.
And charioteers.
The Townsends had determined to assure their party of success, so a great quantity of liquor had been surreptitiously brought over from their house and was now flowing freely. But even amid the luxury of costume and high spirits represented there, the entrance of the camel created something of a stir, and Perry was immediately surrounded by a curious, laughing crowd attempting to penetrate the identity of this beast that stood by the doorway, eyed the dancers with his hungry, melancholy gaze. And then Perry saw Betty standing in front of a booth. And thus, ladies and gentlemen, concludes Act 2. We'll be right back after your next course for the conclusion of our play. But once again, please listen to these brief messages from our kind sponsors.